This show was brought to you by Ouch My Ego, ouchmyego.com.
Well, folks, this morning I woke up to more bad news on top of already bad news that's going on
currently in the world.
In the world today. Hi, LB.
Hey.
And that was that 2016 isn't done killing people. Beloved people. Most notably, one of our most beloved actors, Bill Paxton.
Damn! Crap! Damn it!
Yeah, it's a real big bummer.
Yeah, so this year, 2017, I was planning on doing this movie anyway.
Right.
With some, and it actually makes sense that it would be you, but I thought maybe it was going to be John. But today, it just seems so much more appropriate to do this with you. So, LB, what did we just watch?
The Dark Backward.
Ladies and gentlemen, won't you please give a warm welcome to the comedy stylings of Mr. Marty Malt.
Marty Malt has to be the worst stand-up comic I have ever had the misfortune to see.
What are you being so picky for?
I'm reminded tonight of something that happened to me the other day. I went to the post office to get some stamps, and this giant boot came down from the ceiling and stamped me on the head.
Even you didn't laugh.
I was laughing on the inside.
You're not funny, Mark.
Oh, you got a bike, man.
What?
On your back, a bug bite or something.
The doctor will see you now.
His real problem is we could always cut it off.
Marty, what happened?
Look at your lung.
I am sick and tired of you little mama boys coming in here every time you have an abrasion or a hand growing on the back or whatever.
Look, Marty, it's all over between the two of us.
We'd like to book him on next week's show.
We're going to Hollywood!
Starring Judd Nelson.
My name is Marty Mall.
Bill Paxton.
It's Gussie Pussy.
Wayne Newton.
Yes, Jackie Chrome.
Lara Flynn Boyle.
I love you, Marty Mall.
James Caan.
I'm a doctor.
Rob Lowe.
Dirk Delta.
The Dark Backward.
We're going to Hollywood, and we're going to be big stars.
That's my boy! That's my boy!
As you heard, it's pretty strange
in
the trailer. Bill Paxton is known for doing standout little moments in bigger films.
Right.
So most people remember him first from Weird Science. And then Terminator, Aliens, Predator 2. But in between all that, and I'll have you note, he was in a band called Martini Ranch, which I also spun a few songs today of that. He's a very eclectic gentleman. His characters are standout and bonkers most of the time, at least in early career. And his musical work was also bonkers.
Yeah, Martini Ranch has that very 80s feel, like late 80s.
88.
I don't know how to describe Martini Ranch.
It's got to really be 52's thing to it. It's got a Devo thing to it.
Kind of reminds me of, I say industrial, but that's not quite right at all.
No.
But an element of something like Art of Noise.
Yes. So early electronic.
Yeah.
And that's Art of Noise, and it was all kind of remix sound. Even though they're brand new original songs, it always sounds like a remix. And that is, yes, so like elements of B-52s, Devo, Art of Noise, and of course, just Bill Paxton and his crazy brain.
Yeah.
So that's Martini Ranch. So that's just a side note. He also did other crazy movies like Vagrant and Bit Parts here and there. And True Lies was one of those. But he didn't become a household name until Twister.
That's right. Which I don't think I've seen Twister.
No?
No, I think it was on like in the break room once or something. You know, it's one of those movies that
TNT would always show.
TNT, AMC, like, you know, all those cable channels. It's part of their rotation. So I would see parts of it on occasion. Did you see the GPS thing of all the storm chasers, what they did today?
No.
There's a photo where you can see all their, I don't know, their plots, the points where they are. And they spelled out a BP.
Aww.
With their locations. In tribute. It's kind of cute.
It is. Oh, well, storm chasers weren't heard of until Twister.
Yeah.
And then TV just loved storm chasers. I only have seen exactly what you've seen in passing Twister. So his most famous work I haven't seen, but I have seen The Dark Backward. I saw it when it came out.
Oh, in 1991.
Yeah, well, I saw it probably in 92 when it came on cable.
Oh, okay.
So it's still, you know, like home video release is when I saw it, not theatrical release. I was still of an age in 91 in which I didn't go to movies that were rated R.
Okay.
Especially smaller movies like this one made not hardly a buck because it was independent.
It's critically acclaimed though.
Well, it is or isn't.
Well, the New York Times liked it. It was like in the, I could be quoting incorrectly, but I believe I saw that it was considered in the top 10 films that came out in 1991 by the New York Times.
Huh, that's strange.
Yeah.
Well, it also isn't strange because New York Times, New York, big city yeah. thinkers. But to the aggregate, Rotten Tomatoes nowadays, it's like way low.
Okay.
Because a lot of critics just were like, this is not, this doesn't work. Where's the focus? What is the point? What's the story?
Yeah.
Well, let's ask that question. What is the story, LB?
Oh, it's a doozy. Okay. Judd Nelson is our main protagonist in this film. He's a garbage man.
So is Bill Paxton.
Yes, they're like partners. They're like the Charlie Sheen and Emilio Estevez of The Dark Backward.
Men at work.
Yeah. But he moonlights as a stand-up comedian whose jokes just don't hit.
My name is Marty Mull. I'm reminded tonight of something that happened to me the other day. I went to the post office to get some stamps, and I waited my usual 3 hours in line. And just as I was getting to the window, an announcement was made that if anyone just needed stamps to move into a different line. So I moved into the different line, and this giant boot came down from the ceiling and stamped me on the head.
I would say he suffers from being probably the most nervous stand-up comedian ever depicted. I'm gonna just say this real quick. Gilbert Gottfried started, and the reason why he sounds the way he does,
the famous Gilbert Gottfried,
uh-huh.
I know, I have to do it loud, is because he was nervous, and he turned that into a shtick.
Ah.
Emo Phillips.
Yeah, I was going to mention Emo.
Turned it into a shtick.
Uh-huh.
This character did not, initially. There's no shtick to it. It's just the most nervous depiction.
Well, it's kind of strange because you feel like it's performance art. You know, like you feel like if we were to, like, next week, just go to some random stand-up show and that guy comes out and he does what he does, we might think it's, like, the most hilarious thing ever because it feels like an Andy Kaufman type of thing.
Yeah, okay, I get it.
But that's not what this movie is.
No.
So that's beside the point, I think.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Andy Kaufman and the following comedians that do the awkward comedy
right.
as hilarity.
Like jokes on you because you don't get it.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
But these jokes are just flat.
Yeah. A couple of them are
kind of funny. Yeah. Eventually there's some real actual landing humor to it. But
so it's hard to describe the world this movie takes place in. So it's difficult for me to give a plot without just like trying to explain every single thing.
Okay, just try to describe the setting.
I don't know. Like it's not dystopian, but except it seems dystopian. Like there's trash everywhere. There's one corporation that is kind of just a supplier for everything.
Notably food.
Yeah, I saw coffee.
They're called Blumps.
Blumps. And they have a 1950s looking housewife face.
Sort of the woman that would be married to Bob from the Church of the Subgenius.
Oh.
Just seems like the counterpart, the guy with the pipe.
Yeah.
And his wife is Mrs. Blumps.
Yeah, I guess so.
Products like Pig Newtons, pork packed cookie.
Yeah, there was a lot of pork jokes. I remember pork juice.
In Weasel Roni.
Weasel Roni.
Yeah. Squeezable bacon. And pork juice.
Yeah.
Farm fresh. Like, those are the big notable ones.
Right.
These are things that are just laying around.
So it's just, like, really weird, gross things throughout this film.
Everything's dirty.
Everything's dirty, you're right. Everything's, like, dark and dank, and it doesn't seem like it's set in any sort of future or any sort of past. I don't know.
But everything is based on a sort of inner city 50s kind of vibe.
Kind of. It's like, we always go back to David Lynch, but it's kind of like David Lynch is just being gross.
Well, there's a quote from the Village Voice. You know, how posters or covers or DVDs or Blu-rays or whatever like to pull quotes from periodicals. This one says, an anarchical mix of John Waters and David Lynch.
Well, okay.
And I will say, by way of Terry Gilliam.
Yeah, okay.
So you mix Brazil, which is also one of those, where is this, when is this, is this setting?
Right.
And you have Eraserhead in particular,
mm-hmm.
where it's an industrial world.
Right.
And then the John Waters thing, which is everybody's pretty much disgusting.
It's just trash, yeah.
There are two people that aren't disgusting in this movie, and that is Wayne Newton.
Yes, Jackie Chrome, talent agent at your service.
That's debatable.
No, he's not disgusting. He's not presented as grimy, grime-covered disgusting.
Yeah. It's pretty cheesy, though.
He is absolutely Wayne Newton.
Yeah.
And Lara Flynn Boyle, who, in certain scenes, is probably the best she'll ever look, is in this movie. And we'll get into her performance later, but...
So, let's talk about we haven't even gotten to why this movie is, like, so weird.
Yeah. I mean, we're just saying what the plot is.
Right.
He sucks at comedy.
Right.
Bill Paxton, though, steals the show. Because, I mean, he's Bill Paxton.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of actually really great performances here. And some might actually say that this isn't a great performance from Bill Paxton. I'm not that person. I am going to say it's great, but it is jarring compared to everybody else's performance.
Yeah, it's very intense. He seems like a cartoon character.
Yes.
Everything he does is exaggerated, and it's perfect.
He encourages our main character, Marty.
I was roaring! Oh, God! You were funny. Trust me, I know comedy, and you were funny. Hilarious! And I don't usually use that word unless I really mean it.
Why does he encourage him?
Well, he wants to ride on the coattails into fame.
That's his endgame eventually?
Yeah, I think so. He tries to insert himself into Marty's act. Bill Paxton plays the accordion.
Yes.
But still, we're not to where it's like super weird yet.
No. not yet. What I was saying was weird was the intensity and the way that Gus tells Marty what he thinks Marty wants to hear.
Oh, right. Because he's lying to him, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I was laughing on the inside.
Yeah, because there's crickets whenever he tells his jokes.
Yeah. Which, actually, they never did the crickets thing, and I wish they did, because that's one of my favorite gags when I just go on long-winded about crap. Just throw crickets on the soundtrack, because I bore people sometimes. So, one day, Marty wakes up with a lump on his back.
Smack dab in the middle of his back. And he goes to see a doctor about it.
James Caan, also doing my favorite James Caan performance.
Yeah.
Here's where your problem is.
What is it?
Will you wait? I'm a professional. Would you like for me to jump on a misconclusion, diagnose you, and send you off in a coma? You'd like that, maybe?
The crummiest doctor probably I've ever seen. He's like the prototype for House or something.
Okay. He gets this lump looked at, and he's basically told, just don't mess with it.
Don't pick it.
It'll go away.
And he gets to put a little Band-Aid over it.
Yeah, it's cute. And then a couple days later, he wakes up, and he is progressively getting larger. And he wakes up, and there's a baby hand.
Like a little tiny baby hand.
Yes, growing out of his back.
That's where the story, aside from the setting, which is completely unusual, it also has a strange kind of lighting. There's some sort of garish lights happening, or blue or red lights on things and whatever. And so steamy, inner city, sort of like an antithesis to the Dick Tracy movie that came out previously to that, which was like really tailored cartoon version. This is like those sets were left out in the rain for too long. Like, kind of like that. And then this turn, which actually is the turn for the absolute weird in this story.
Yep. Eventually, the hand grows. He wakes up and he has a fully grown human adult male arm out of his back. So he has three arms.
Now, the story continues. They proceed to get a manager, who is Wayne Newton.
Mm-hmm.
And they try to figure out how to exploit this third arm.
The gimmick.
We gotta do something about the name, fellas. Just doesn't grab me.
You're right. Marty Mark, that name stinks.
How about Gus?
Gus the three-arm comic and his musical accompanist, Gus. You guys don't know a thing about show business. You gotta have a name that's snazzy, a name with pizzazz, you know?
How about Pepe Rodriguez?
The amazing Maltzy.
What are you, stupid?
Willie the Wonder Comic.
Willie the Three three-armed wonder.
Comic.
Huh?
Willie the three-armed wonder comic.
Desi, the three-armed wonder comic.
Perfect!
Where did Desi come from?
Genius, my boy. Welcome to showbiz, Desi, the three-armed wonder comic.
To no good avail, really.
Yeah.
So Rob Lowe shows up at a certain point.
Dirk Delta. I'm the talent scout for the Nightlight Show.
And he's got a prosthetic nose.
Mm-hmm.
And he reminds me, he's not playing it like him, but visually, it reminds me of Crispin Glover, which I was thinking as I was watching it this time, that Crispin Glover would have been an appropriate fit for this type of movie.
Probably. You know, Crispin Glover, man, I'm kind of tired of his weird crap. Like, really, I mean, he was like the go-to guy for, like, just seriously just weird crap, like, for many years. And, I mean, he's a weirdo, right? He's like a...
Yeah, he owns it. That's what he does. That's right. That's his business, basically.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, I'm just kind of over it, I guess. So I'm glad that it's not Crispin Glover in this movie.
Yeah, so maybe it might have been written off. It was written off.
Yeah.
This is, you say it's critically acclaimed, maybe so, but this was written off by so many people. Now, looking at the internet and as social media goes along, this movie is now starting to be noticed a little bit.
Hmm.
And it's just in the circles that I travel, which is a bunch of film dorks.
Okay.
And people are going,
I've never heard of this. I'm going to have to check it out.
Stuff like that. Well, there's like two of us that have heard of it and that were advertising, hey, we appreciate this movie, like I did today on my Instagram.
Uh-huh.
I posted a thing about this. And then I see somebody else posting a thing about this.
Hmm.
And on their responses, people are like, what's this?
Right.
And it's not even like a pat on my back with my third arm.
Mm-hmm.
That I know of this movie. I want more people to know of this movie.
I definitely wouldn't have known of it if it weren't for you. Now, we're sort of cheating on this podcast because both of us have seen this movie before, but I've only seen it once with you. You showed it to me many years ago, and I didn't remember it. I remembered the arm.
Yeah, but what else happens?
Right. So it's not exactly cheating.
No, it's not.
But
you've had over 5 years not having seen it. When you did see it was 2008.
Okay.
So you're good. You're in the clear. It's actually the last time I saw it, too.
I like this film because it has Judd Nelson, and it has Rob Lowe, and it has Bill Paxton, of course. But I like it because, I mean, there was it the Brat Pack?
Mm-hmm.
That cultural zeitgeist or whatever? And, like, I feel like that this film, them doing it, I mean, they're friends, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess so.
Most likely.
I assume.
I feel like that this is, like, a response to that.
The pretty boy movie thing that they were doing?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
They were always playing college guys or yuppies.
Mm-hmm.
Misadventures, comedy college, or drama, thriller, yuppie stuff.
Right. So this gave them an opportunity to be weird and ugly and just do something interesting.
Yeah. So Rob Lowe's character is just a sleazy Hollywood type. And so he plays, I think, with fake teeth.
Yeah,
and
it looks like it.
Of course, fake nose.
Uh-huh. I even think there was something on his chin. Like, I don't think
a prosthetic chin?
Yeah, I don't think his chin is that much of a cleft, is it?
Paxton, though. Why? He's actually the standout here is because he plays everything, to paraphrase Spinal Tap, to 11.
Woo! Yeah! Oh yeah! Oh yeah!
He has a lot of energy. Everything he does, he had a lot of energy in doing, like some facial expressions that Bill Paxton makes.
When he's not being loud and obnoxious in this movie, visibly his face is doing something insane.
Yeah.
Like he's entertaining a child, a little toddler or a baby. Try to get that kid's attention. That's what his face is doing throughout the entire movie.
Yeah.
So it's not leading man, it's actual support acting.
Mm-hmm.
Leading man stuff would come later, and his subtle years with Big Love.
Right.
And these dramas like that.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different. Like, if that's what you know of Bill Paxton and you're not really familiar with his earlier punk roles or this thing, then yeah, you're in for a big surprise if you watch this movie. I suggest you do it because it's rather eye-opening. I mentioned Lara Flynn Boyle before.
Right.
That she's sort of the love interest.
I love you, Marty Malt.
Mm-hmm. This movie does a couple of strange things with her, but she's known at the time for being in Twin Peaks as Donna.
Yes.
And I can't stand her in Twin Peaks. I can't. Not just because the history of Twin Peaks, behind the scenes of it, where she insisted that the Audrey Horn storyline be truncated and changed because she was actually seeing Kyle MacLachlan, Dale Cooper at the time, which actually altered the whole story of Twin Peaks. So that clouds my perception of her and her acting ability and skills. But then I watched the show, of course. It's my favorite TV show, so her performance in it is so melodramatic. And kind of ridiculous. Maybe that's how she's directed, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of a soap opera.
So, but her big, like, weeping moments and all this stuff are so loud and obnoxious in this, like, eye-rolly kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
But in this movie, The Dark Back, where she has one freak-out moment, but before that, she's this really soft-spoken, very subtle, and very appropriate in all of her scenes. How she's dealing with Marty, her boyfriend, just completely quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And then the freak out, because she learns that he has an arm on his back, and it's just not normal.
Oh my God! That's gross! That is so gross! That's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen! People don't grow hands out of their back! What's wrong with you?
That's when they let her get loud and stuff, and it's totally appropriate. And I was impressed with the scenes that she's in.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I haven't seen a lot of things that Lara Flynn Boyle has been in. Like, I really can't think of anything other than Twin Peaks and when she dated Jack Nicholson in the 90s.
Men in Black 2. You saw that one. And you hated
Wayne's World. She was in Wayne's World.
And she's funny in that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I don't really have much of an opinion on her as an actress. I don't like her in Twin Peaks for the same reasons that you do not. This film, she did pretty well. And the fantasy scene where she's in a swimsuit, she comes out of the ocean, that's...
And it's a one-piece swimsuit.
Yeah.
This is early 90s. This would definitely be a two-piecer type of time period where early 90s just
sure.
Beer girls.
She looked really, really nice, and I'm not trying to say that, you know, you should judge a woman's appearance and, you know, that's what gives her worth as an actress or anything. I'm not saying that at all, but she did look really nice, and I was really kind of surprised.
You actually mentioned that to me.
Yeah, I mean, everything...
I didn't bring it up. I didn't go, right. Oh, look at her, she looks hot. I just realized that you were right when you pointed it out to
me. Like, everything, her face, her makeup, her hair, like, everything, it just, like, really, she just really looked pretty.
She eventually, in her more current years, got a really kind of skin and bones appearance with her figure. And this, mm-hmm. she had curves.
Yeah.
I forgot all about this scene.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pleasant.
Yeah, so, you know what else is weird about this movie is written and directed by Adam Rifkin.
Yeah. Well, that's weird in itself, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Rifkin is a strange person. If you hear him talk, he's just really, I don't know what's going on.
He's kind of curt.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on in his head, really. But what's weird, and I'm sorry I keep saying weird, I just can't think of a different word.
Strange,
but
odd.
Adam Rifkin wrote a lot of family-friendly movies, like he wrote the Underdog movie, and Mouse Hunt, that one with Nathan Lane. Mouse Hunt, Small Soldiers, that movie Zoom.
Tim Allen movie.
Yeah, so I feel like that The Dark Backward is like Adam Rifkin's soul trying to escape.
But he did that first.
Yeah, I mean, okay.
He did that way early in his career.
Fine, just shoot down my theory.
It's shot down. It's his film school artistic guy coming out.
Okay, fine.
Shot down.
Fine.
This movie is controversial because Bill Paxton comes on a bit too strong in a scene with Lara Flynn Boyle. It's all Bill Paxton stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
He finds what seems to be a corpse in the trash of a lady.
Yeah.
And this thing, actually, when I saw it in my later teens, this scene just really disturbed me. Like, I was just like, what are you? Why would you? What? Just a naked lady laying in the trash, presumably dead, and he's really way too interested.
Mm.
And she's not necrotic or anything. It's just a model lady, so she's attractive. But he almost gets caught googly-eyeing this corpse. It just so disturbed me.
That's pretty gross.
And it's early on in the movie, too. It's this is after he's encouraging him, but before he turns on the main character. Because it is a exploitation film, and I don't mean exploitation in the sense of exploitation 70s cinema. I mean, they exploit the main character. Everybody does, in some way. It's a very cynical film.
Mm.
Now, this is before any of that happens. So it's setting up that character to be just an absolutely disgusting character.
Yeah.
That's why I say it's controversial, because the ways Adam decides to show this disgustingness to us. There's a scene in which Bill Paxton is talking about the garbage food that he eats.
Oh, God.
Did any of you ever eat dog food stir-fried in castor oil topped with minced clams in a sugary cream sauce with pimento and chives?
No one eats that!
Oh, yeah? Show them what I had for breakfast this morning!
Telling these three very large women about this. Almost a one-upping what disgusting foods they eat. It's just so gross. That's the John Waters scene.
Yeah, I gotcha. It's really weird to me how Bill Paxton's character is. I mean, he's the supporting role in this film. Like, the star of this film is Judd Nelson as Marty, the comedian. However, Bill Paxton completely just steals the show every scene.
Well, in the scenes later when the story rounds out and Marty finally has his material that works.
Having a third arm taught me quite a bit about my friends, though. My girlfriend dumped me, gave me the boot. I guess she didn't like me always having the upper hand.
Yeah.
It's void of Bill Paxton's character.
Right. He really just needed to shake him off.
It has no gimmick.
Right.
No Bill Paxton gimmick. Yeah, it's very interesting. The necessity of how the story went. It just makes sense. It all makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
We want
mm-hmm.
you to watch the movie, so we're actually being a little skimpy on the ending of the major plot points and all this stuff.
Right.
But I recommend it, except you're not going to like it. Or maybe you are. Maybe I'm selling you guys short.
You know, they don't make movies like this anymore. Like, you know, we're quick to say that these days, like, they don't make them like they used to or whatever, but, like, I can't think of a film that has come out in the past 5 years.
Oh, definitely not.
That is remotely similar to a film like The Dark Backward. And, you know, I think the face of independent film has changed.
Absolutely changed.
It's, I mean, I'm not even saying, like, it's all commercial now or anything, but I don't know. Like, I don't feel like people are making weird movies anymore.
Well, this is one of those weird movies that also doesn't really have anything to do with mental illness explicitly.
That's true.
At all. And what we've been seeing lately is with horror, and lately as in for the past 20 years, it seems, if you're going to have an indie movie and a horror movie at the same time, you're going to have somebody struggling with some kind of mental illness, or at least the character thinks they might be.
Mm-hmm.
For the plot purpose of, are they crazy or not?
Yeah.
And this movie doesn't do that, and Eraserhead didn't do that. A lot of the David Lynch stuff, even though it has, like, missing identity stuff, isn't really about mental illness. It's about dream states.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
These types of movies are very rare to come by.
Everything now seems like a weird movie is just weird for the sake of being weird, or there's some kind of darkness without sincerity. What I'm thinking about right now when I say that is like a Mark Duplass movie, where it's weird and creepy, but like there's just something about it that just doesn't resonate with me in a way that makes it feel like it's a genuine movie or a genuine story. The Dark Backward, however, has a sort of sincerity to it where you believe that it's happening, even though you can't like put your finger on what kind of world this is. Like, you believe that it's happening. You believe that the characters are who they are. And, you might not like them.
What you're talking about here is the subtlety of world building.
Yes.
World building is really important for a story. You have to establish the kind of world that they're in, that if anything can happen, then you have to spring the anything on them. If anything can't happen, like in a Mark Duplass movie most of the mm-hmm. time, anything can't happen and it's just a mumblecore thing. Not all of them. He's got a couple that are interesting.
Yeah, I'm not.
He's got a couple
that
are actually really good, but a lot of times his stuff is just mumblecore. I'm glad you got a career, dude. But this, it's the world is built. It's a tangible thing. It's a real thing. It's real grimy and dirty and dingy. You have established kind of a corporatocracy one specific brand over everything. And everybody seems to be going about their business in this world as it would more than likely happen in this kind of world.
Mm-hmm.
It's world building. It's why Star Wars worked in the originals, because the world was built and it was a real thing and lived in type of thing.
Right.
That is the thing that I think you're trying to put your finger on.
Yeah, that's true.
So yeah, you would recommend this? No, you wouldn't? Are you like me and you think everybody would hate it, but you want them to watch it?
I don't think everybody would hate it. I think that some people would hate it. You know, I get really disturbed easily when it comes to like gross things, you know? Like the, really, like if a movie's just too weird, like if it's just, if it's trying to weird me out.
So if it's like a Tim and Eric movie.
Yeah. I don't respond to that, and I don't like it. This film is not like that at all, so I do like it. So, I mean, like, I don't know. It's sort of unexpected, I guess. But part of the reason that it works so well is all the actors' performances and the care that was taken. There's like so many like subtle like nuance type of things that are going on in this movie. It's like almost inside jokes that Adam Rifkin is having with his audience.
Well, it's definitely about showbiz.
Yeah.
So if you're going to make something about showbiz, the audience loves behind the scenes.
Yeah.
The audience always wants to know about how things happen. And so this is kind of an origin story of a comedian.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? The ending is uplifting.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes a difference.
Big difference.
It really, really does. Because like the guy, Marty, he finally gets what he deserves. That sounds like he's...
Yeah, he gets laughs.
You know what I mean. Yeah, he
never once got an actual laugh from anybody.
Right.
And finally he gets some subtle chuckles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like fuel.
I mean, you see the difference in his face.
Confidence.
It's really great. So, I mean, it's a story that makes you feel really bad, but then it makes you feel really good.
So it is a hero's journey.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, sure. Watch it. Watch The Dark Backward.
So, folks, we bid you adieu. Rest in peace, Bill Paxton. Good night, everyone.
Good night.